Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and today we're talking about a topic that I get asked about a lot, which is how to improve your speed as an ultra runner, how to increase your pace, and ultimately how you can set PRs in your race that you're going for, whether it's your second 50-mile, 100-mile, or anything like that, or maybe you're going for your first go at a given distance and you want to do it as fast as you possibly can, this is the episode for you. And a lot of times in ultra running, right, we think about going inherently slower than we would in a marathon or a half marathon or something shorter like that, right? But in the end of the day, there comes a point that once we've kind of completed the distances that we want to achieve, we want to be able to get faster, or we want to increase our pace so that we can, you know, get ahead of cutoffs, or we can hit a certain time goal or anything of the sorts. Whatever you're looking to do in terms of increasing your pace and running faster for longer, this is going to be the episode for you. And just to give you context on my background, now, when I first started running, my average pace was anywhere between 11:30 to 12-minute miles, even upwards to 12:30 and sometimes even 13 minutes. And I'm meaning on flat terrain, where I'm not talking just, you know, mountainous terrain or anything. That was my average pace. And over the years, I've developed it to the point where I can get my low-intensity runs anywhere between 8:15 to 9:30. And I know that's a wide range, but usually I like to think of like low-end easy, where it's like easy, super chill, like recovery kind of pace. That's like usually around like 9:30 for me. And then kind of on the higher end of the easy side gets to about like 8:15 or so. But anyways, semantics aside, I'm going to teach you exactly what I did in the process to get faster, some mistakes that I made that I had to recorrect. So if you are making those mistakes in your training, you can correct it. And ultimately, some workouts that you can implement in your training to be a faster ultra runner. So we're going to dive into it. Now, before we kick off the episode, though, I really, really want to let you know that I've officially partnered with an amazing company called PlayOn Relief. I've been using their product for a few months now, and I love it so much that I wanted to partner with them to let you guys in on all the amazing benefits that I get from it, because I frequently get asked, how do you deal with muscle soreness during long runs, races, or even after long efforts? The standard answer is, of course, the more you train, the less sore you're going to be, but let's face it, long runs can still hurt, especially in a race. So to help with my own soreness, I've been using a topical spray called PlayOn during my long runs and races, and it is a game changer for aches, pains, and muscle soreness because it zaps the soreness away in seconds and lasts a really long time. It's so easy to use too. You just spray it on, you don't have to rub it in, so there's no mess anywhere. I really can't get enough of it for my muscles on my long runs, races, and in recovery. And the best part, it's sweat resistant. So the more you sweat, it still stays on your skin. When you spray it on, it goes to work in seconds because it goes beyond the skin and into the muscle and the joints directly where the soreness is to reduce pain at the source. This is unlike other CBD creams or Icy Hots that are just on the skin level in terms of what they attack. Plus, it's all natural, FDA compliant, backed by 10 years of research, so it's legit. I hate putting stuff in my body filled with chemicals, so that's why I like the natural mixture of PlayOn. And because of PlayOn, it helped me battle extreme leg soreness at this year's Javelina 100 at mile 60, and it's also helped tons of my clients with soreness on the runs that they're going on that I send them on that are on the longer side for sure. So I'm telling you, if you deal with aches or pains or you're looking to be less sore in your next ultra and on your long runs, you gotta try PlayOn. And because I love this product so much, PlayOn is going to give you a special discount on your next order. All you need to do is use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at PlayOnRelief.com to get a special discount of 20% off your order at PlayOnRelief.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly to get to that website. That's code EverydayUltra to get 20% off your order when you go to PlayOnRelief.com, and you can go to the link in the show notes if that's easier for you. Hope you try it so you can be less sore, keep running strong, and play on. All right, everybody, now let's get into this episode on how to run faster for longer, increase your pace, and set PRs as an ultra runner. This is one of my favorite topics because, as you heard in the beginning of this episode, like for me, I increased my pace pretty greatly over the past few years. And that was something that I really, really wanted to do and was always just really interested by. And as I mentioned before, like my average pace on an easy run was anywhere between like 11:30 to, you know, 12:30 or 13 on flat ground. And I really wanted to know what it took to get faster. And over time, I implemented that same strategy that a lot of people hear when they get into endurance running, which is you have to run slower in order to run faster. And so that's what I did. I ran slower, and ultimately I did end up getting faster. Now, that's not the thing that I'm going to cover in this episode, because I will tell you, and I think a lot of people can resonate with this as an ultra runner, right? There's only so much to a point where you can run slow and run easy for so long until you hit this plateau point. I remember like I was progressing and seeing my average pace at an easy intensity continue to drop. But then there kind of came a time where it just plateaued and it kind of stayed stagnant. And I didn't really get faster over the times that I do it. This was primarily in my, more so in my triathlon years when I was doing the triathlon stuff. And I never really increased speed. And I was wondering, I was like, hey, like I'm running easy a lot. Like what the heck? I don't understand why I'm getting faster. And it was only until that I started working with the coach and the coach started to enlighten me on certain best practices when it comes to getting faster, that ultimately when I was able to implement those things, not only was I able to, like I said before, drop my easy pace down from anywhere between 8:15 to 9:30, but I was also able to greatly PR my 100 mile time by a decent chunk. Now, granted, now that PR time versus my other one does have a lot to do with elevation gain as well. And so, but I'll give you some context here. My first 100 miler was 24 hours basically on the dot, a little less than 24. I think it was like 2350. And that was at a course with 10,000 feet of elevation gain, which pretty runnable terrain. And then months later, like my PR was at Javelina 100, where I ran 1636, and that has elevation gain of about 5,000. So still a pretty big significant chunk, even without the elevation gain kind of difference on there. And a lot of the times in between those two races, I was implementing the things that we are going on in here as well. So I'm going to give you all my secrets, all the best practices, so you can get into that first. First and foremost, I want to talk about the biggest mistakes that people make when they try to get faster. And where I want to start is very similar to my story. And it's always the first piece of advice that I give to anybody who's starting out to run or someone who needs to assess their training and be honest with themselves and really, really dial in on this to see if it's being truly followed. And that is to run slower for most of your training. And when I say slower, what I mean by that is you want to run at a lower intensity. Now, as you notice in my story, you might be hearing it saying, hey, Joe, that wasn't the thing that made you faster. In the long run, yes, but to start out, the biggest mistake that a lot of people make is they run too hard. So when you're running too hard out there, what happens is when we think about the two different energy systems in our body, we have the aerobic and the anaerobic systems, right? The aerobic system is basically low intensity energy system, and that is inherently responsible for having you go for longer periods of time, and it is utilizing more fat and more of the deeper energy stores in our body that's going to allow us to go longer periods of time, and therefore it's at a lower intensity, and that's the aerobic system inside of our body. Now, the other is our anaerobic system, which, as you can infer, the anaerobic system is responsible for more of the high intensity efforts, right? Think about sprints, tempo runs, all those kind of things as well. That's what the anaerobic is based off of. And that is primarily more of a carbohydrate burning, glycogen burning energy system that is going to be much more quick and not as sustainable in nature. Now, what happens is a lot of times, and this is a mistake that I made even when I first got into running, is a lot of times people will run and they will run purely anaerobically, right? Because all the time we think about running, we want it to be hard, we want it to be challenging, all this kind of stuff. So maybe we just run out the gate a little hard. And ultimately, we're not training our aerobic base. We are training our anaerobic system, which in an ultra marathon, that's not going to be as beneficial because we're going to need to carry more endurance and be able to go for longer periods of time. And the anaerobic is not a sustainable energy system to go through when you're going in a very, very long effort. So if you're going too fast in your training, more times than you're going slow, you are likely hindering yourself from getting faster. Now, a lot of you might be saying, yes, this is obvious. This is like endurance 101, but here is a big mistake. A lot of people will trick themselves into saying, yeah, I'm running easy, when in reality, they're not running easy. And I actually did a post on this on Instagram because it's something that I see all the time, right? So I'll give you an example. I was running with someone, with a friend, and they were actually talking to me and they were saying that they were struggling to get faster. And what was interesting was as we were running, he was going through and saying this conversation, but he was breathing pretty heavily through each sentence. And he was telling me everything like there, and he was kind of sounding a little bit like this, like trying to get the words out and breathing like this. And I looked at him and I said, hey man, I know exactly what your problem is. He goes like, what's the problem? And I said, you're probably like, is this the intensity that you're going at right now? Like when you're on your easy runs, like how we're doing this right now, is this your easy intensity? And he's like, yeah. And then I'm like, well, you're probably going too fast. And the reason I was able to pick up on that right away is because when you're running at an easy intensity, you should be able to go at a conversational pace. Now, conversational pace doesn't mean what I was mentioning before, where you're kind of sounding like this and you're only getting out a few words before you have to take a breath. It's more so like you're able to get out a sentence, taking a breath, and actually have a true conversation and not feel like you're winded. And a lot of times when people say they have their easy pace, they actually might be pushing it a little harder to that point. So a way to check yourself if you're actually running at an easy intensity for you is when you're out on your runs all the time, I totally suggest this, is to have a conversation and start talking. And you can go ahead and, you know, call someone up on the run. I know like one of my clients likes to do that. He'll call someone up and like have a conversation and see if it comes out to check his intensity. Or you can just pretend to have a conversation with someone. Now, yes, you might look insane to the person. They might be like, oh my God, that person is talking to themselves. But hey, who cares? You were going at the right intensity. So it doesn't matter what people think, or if they think you're nuts or talking to Bruce Willis from The Sixth Sense or anything like that, right? Anywho, you want to be able to do a talk test, because a talk test is going to be a good indication of the intensity that you are at. And generally, you want to make sure you are at a conversational pace. And so I suggest everybody, if you haven't done a talk test before on your easy runs, to start implementing it to really see if you are going at the right intensity. And if you feel like you are breathing a little harder than a conversational pace, that means you have to take it a step back and really go into it as well. Now, the caveat with this is if you're just starting to get into running, it is really hard to run and get into a conversational pace because our body is getting adapted to it, and that is totally okay. So if you're new to running and you find that even running at a very, very low intensity for you is still giving this like heavy breathing, that's okay. It will adapt over time. But if you have been running for a while, you should be able to get at a slower pace and at an intensity that's going to be able to be easy for you. And here's the thing, it might be way slower than what you're used to, but let me tell you this, it will help you to get faster because what you're doing is you're training your body to be more efficient at that aerobic capacity where ultimately you're going to be able to go longer for a faster amount of time. And not only are you gonna get faster, but think about like your average pace in it itself. Because if you start out aerobic, you might be starting out, and I'm just making numbers for numbers sake here, you might be coming out at a 9-minute pace, but over time, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, if you're running strictly anaerobic, like it's not going to be sustainable and your pace is going to increase, and therefore your average pace is going to increase as well. Whereas if you're running aerobically, that pace is a lot more sustainable over a long period of time, and ultimately you're going to get a very similar pace that's going to be throughout your ultra, which is probably generally going to be less than a really, really big positive split if you were to run it anaerobically. So just know that running easier is going to be the key to do it. So if you find yourself, you know, running a little bit harder, and by the way, here's also always a rule of thumb that I like to say all the time, and this was something that I learned from Pat Reagan, who's an incredible runner, and I always tell myself this every time I'm running easy or I have an easy run, is that it's better to run your easy runs 20% easier than to run them 1% harder. Which means that if you are wondering whether or not you should go easier or not to where you're at, it's probably a safe bet to go easier on your easy runs, that is. So a lot of your training should just be low and slow intensity. So that's the first thing. Now, the second mistake is going to sound like it contradicts the first one, but it doesn't. It's an and statement as opposed to an or statement. And that is, the mistake that I see people make is that they only run in a low intensity. And so not only should you be running at a low intensity for most of your miles, like that is true, most of your volume should be low intensity, you should also incorporate yourself with more higher intensity efforts. And so that's going to be something that I always see people do. Now, there is an optimal way to insert this in your training. You can't just like say like, oh, I'm going to run harder today, or I'm going to run like, you know, slower today. There's a whole kind of way to structure it as well, which I'll go over in this episode, of course. But I also want to say, like, you know, you have to at some point add in a time where you are going to add in some higher intensity runs. And it doesn't have to be, you know, most of your week. Again, 80% of your runs should likely be at a lower intensity, and then 20% can be at that higher intensity, so to say. And that can be up to 20%. It doesn't have to be 20%. It can be one time per week. It can be two times per week. Sometimes it can be three times a week. I think that can be a little bit much, but think about it. If you're running, let's just say, you know, 6 days a week, and you're running twice at a higher intensity, and four of those are at a lower intensity, you're following that 80-20 principle that I mentioned before, which is generally where I usually fall on the scale in terms of my training, and then also usually what I prescribe for clients who are running 6 days a week. So that is something that you want to do, and I'll talk about how to incorporate that, but that's another mistake. And so if you're listening to this right now and you're like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, that's why, because all I've been doing has been running slow for years and years and years, and ultimately I just haven't seen myself getting faster, even though they told me that in order to run fast, you must run slower, right? You have to also put in some speed work in there. And the reason why that is because similar to what I was mentioned before with the energy systems with aerobic and anaerobic, there also is a, I don't want to say paradox, but it's an interesting kind of thing in that when you're working the aerobic system, it also helps a part of the anaerobic system and vice versa. And kind of getting deeper into what that is, right? There's essentially three thresholds that we have in our body, right? So these three thresholds essentially can translate to the aerobic and the anaerobic systems in a way that has our body react at given intensities. And so those thresholds, number one is VO2 max. So VO2 max is just a fancy way of saying the maximum amount of oxygen that an individual can utilize during intense or maximal exercise. And so this is going to be that how well you process oxygen, more or less. And that's like really high intensity, right? So VO2 max is going to be one of the thresholds that is in there. The second kind of threshold is our lactate threshold. Now, our lactate threshold is the point in our body in which lactate builds up in our muscles and our body can't clear it anymore. So just to kind of give, you know, a little bit of layman's terms in terms of why this is important is when we are running at a higher intensity, lactate, and even a lower intensity, lactate builds up in our muscles, and our body needs to process that lactate out in order to keep our muscles moving strong. Now, if we run too intense, or even if we run for very, very long periods of time, we might hit a point where lactate is going to build up so much in our muscles faster than the point that the body can clear it. And ultimately, that's our lactate threshold, where our body's going to have to force us to slow down because it needs to process that lactate through. And so that's the second thing, lactate threshold. Now, the one thing to note is that lactate threshold and also VO2 max are more so in the anaerobic system in there as well. Now, the other threshold is our aerobic threshold. Now, our aerobic threshold is basically the high end of where the aerobic intensity goes into the anaerobic intensity. So that's where we go, you know, from the part of primarily fat burning to primarily carbohydrate burning. And ultimately, you know, when you hit that point, you've kind of hit the high end of an easy run, so to say. And so that is the third thing as well. Now, what you have to do is really think about all three of these systems all powering each other in terms of your speed. And so that is, it's something, it's a hard concept to kind of understand, but the way that this works is that when you increase your aerobic threshold, you also increase your VO2 max and you also increase your lactate threshold. When you increase your lactate threshold, you also increase your VO2 max and your aerobic threshold as well. All these things help with each other. Now, you can specifically formulate exercises that are going to maximize that specific threshold in a way, which I'll talk about as well. But here's the kind of caveat with this whole thing is that you can only work at one specific threshold, aka intensity, for a given period before you kind of hit this plateau. And the best way to re-spark growth in another one of those different thresholds is to switch the threshold that you are focusing on in your training. So I'll give you an example, right? You can go from endurance and train the endurance, which is your aerobic threshold, for a long periods of time. But once you hit that plateau, it might be time to move on to focusing on VO2 max or focusing on lactate threshold, right? And then there's a really smart way to really incorporate this in terms of planning for your races, but that's the thing that you want to do. So once you hit that point where you've worked on your aerobic base for so long, you probably want to switch into a different intensity or start adding in more intensity into your training to hit those other thresholds to ultimately get that spark you need to keep going as well, or to keep getting faster, that is. So I know that was really technical from a technical standpoint on there too, but it's really, really important to know in terms of structuring the training and why the interval, why putting in interval training or high intensity training is really, really important. I'll talk about how to structure it in this episode, but that's a big mistake that a lot of people make when they try to get faster is they only run at a low intensity. You have to work all different thresholds, all different areas in order to be a more well-rounded and a faster athlete in the end of the day. So that's the second mistake that people make, is they only run slower. The third mistake that a lot of people make, and this is very, very common in the ultra running world, is that people don't give themselves the time to build. They don't give themselves the time to build. And what that means is they stack races very, very close to each other. So I see it all the time, right? Someone comes out with a race schedule and they're running maybe a 100-miler like every month, or they're running a 100-miler every other month, or they're running an ultra every month, right? It's very, very thing. And listen, I respect and I appreciate that. I think that's awesome. If that's your goal, to go ahead and you know, accomplish as many 100-milers as you want in a short amount of time, or as many ultras as you want in a short amount of time, I'm not knocking that at all. And I think it's awesome. And I think it's incredibly inspiring. The caveat to that is that if an athlete is setting up their schedule like that, and they want to get faster, it is contradicting in and itself. And this will make more sense once I kind of talk about in this episode about how to structure a build. But the reality is, the more time you give yourself to actually sit down and do intentional training, the more you're going to increase your chances to get faster. Because think about when you're doing a very, very long and hard, effort like an ultra marathon. Is you go through a training period, generally for the most part, not always, but for the most part, you'll taper into a race. Ideally, I should say, you will taper into a race. You go through the very hard effort, and then you go through a period of general recovery at the end of it. You should, at least. I know some people just go right into it, but you generally go through a period of recovery. Even if you don't go into a period of recovery, your body is pretty fatigued and probably damaged, you know, to some sense. And when I say damaged, I mean injured, but like there's probably a lot of, you know, muscle damage and things that are going on after an ultra marathon. And let's just say you have that recovery period where your body's just kind of recovering and getting better. If you are launching into another ultra marathon like a month after, you really don't have a lot of leeway to like make progress in fitness. And you're kind of going through this phase of just throwing yourselves into ultra after ultra. Again, I'm not knocking this thing, but if you are trying to get faster, it is very contradictory to the specific goal that you are trying to go for, right? So that is something that I see the mistake, because the conversely is, if you have races that are spaced out, or if you say, hey, I'm not going to like, and I shouldn't say this, because like if you're going for a 100-miler, right, you can put in a 50K or a 50-miler as a training run in the path to it. I'm meaning more so like the really long efforts, like 100 miles or things like that. If you give yourself more time to train for that ultra, you can put in a lot more focused training where you're doing specific interval and speed blocks, which we'll talk about in here as well, and really focus on fitness first and not worrying about this thing of like going in, doing these ginormous efforts and then taking some time to recover and then going right back into the ginormous effort and then recovering. Like, you're not really into that training zone as much. So, and I always say the biggest indicator of success besides consistency in someone, I do in the end of the day believe that consistency is the number one, I shouldn't say secret, but is the number one way to be successful in ultra running. But the second thing is giving yourself longer periods to train. Like, your chances of performing better at that ultra marathon will greatly increase the longer time you give yourself to train for that specific ultra. And think about it, it just logically makes sense too, right? If you have 16 weeks to train for a 100 miler versus 12 weeks for a 100 miler, you're gonna be way more prepared with that 16 weeks, assuming that you do the work. And so a lot of times, if you really want to focus on getting faster, you should focus on getting a more elongated time frame. And for me, like, this was a big mistake that I made in my training. I used to do back-to-back races all the time. When I was doing Ironman, I did an Ultraman, which is like a double Ironman. The week after that, I did a full Ironman. And then 2 weeks after that, I did a half Ironman. Now, again, my goal during that time was I really just wanted to, like, test the human limits and endurance. And I think that stuff is great. However, I did want to get faster. And I was like, why am I not getting faster? And it was because I was stacking races too close to each other and didn't give myself an elongated period to train. So what I did was, after my first 100 miles, which was Zion 100, I told myself, I said, hey, I'm going to give myself a lot of time to train to Javelina 100 and really put in a dedicated training block to go from the mid-April to end of October, which is a pretty long training block. But I told myself, I'm just going to focus on training and I'm going to get it done. Now, I did do a 50K along the way. I did do other, like, endurance challenges along the way, but I didn't do any 100 milers or, like, any 100Ks or, like, these super extreme efforts in between. And I really just focus on the training period. So the more time you, if speed is your goal, the more time you're going to give yourself to build the speed before your next ultra, the better. Now, again, if your goal is just primarily to grit through it and primarily just to, like, you know, get as much mileage done in a short period of time, then listen, you don't have to, you know, give yourself the speed blocks or anything. But if you're listening this far in the episode, I'm going to assume you want to get faster. So that is the one thing that I say. And it can be hard, right? Because racing is exciting and there's so many different races out there and everything like that. Again, if your specific goal is to get faster, I'm just giving you a suggestion of what I usually see in the most common endurance athletes and most successful endurance athletes with building speed, and also for my journey as well. So that is the other mistake that people make, is that they don't give themselves enough time to build up to a specific speed block, so to say. So there is that in that regards. And if you, I guess, like, want, like, a specific time frame, generally, like, what I like to say, usually when you're in the ballpark of, like, 22 to 24 weeks, and that sounds like a very long time frame, if you're, like, focusing on that, like, I think that's a really, really good way to go about it, because we can spend dedicated time in each of the different thresholds that I mentioned before, right? Aerobic threshold, lactate threshold, and VO2 max. We can spend dedicated periods that are going to get the most bang for your buck in those time frames to get there. Now, that, by the way, just assumes that you already have a good aerobic base built up. And it also assumes that you do have a pretty good endurance base built up as well. So that's just one thing I want to say. Those, that 20 to 24 weeks, that will depend on your history and background, but that is assuming that you have a good aerobic base, you have, like, consistency, and you're pretty much, like, good to go in terms of, like, a good solid block. So, but that would kind of be how I look at it. Now, it's very individualized based on the person, right? Like, if I'm working with an athlete and a client, I, like, take into account their running history, injury history, goal race, last race ran, like, all these things. And, like, there is no one size fits all answer. So, but I understand with the podcast, you don't get that benefit of being able to do that specificity on there. So that's why I'm trying to give that kind of time frame on here as well. So that's what I would generally say from my perspective in it as well. So if you want to get faster, I always say, like, race less and train more. And I know that sounds, like, very painful to a lot of people, but, like, if you really want to go for, like, a really, really fast time and just build up some speed, it's really, really going to help. And that doesn't mean you can't race along the way, because you can have tune-up races there and everything of the sorts. So just a mistake that I see people make. All right, so those are some of the biggest mistakes that I see people make with speed work. And now I'll talk about how you can really, really implement specific workouts in your training to get faster, and how to do it in the right way to make sure that you are increasing your pace and running faster for longer and being able to set PRs. So the first thing, first and foremost, right, like, And this kind of goes back to the earlier thing, is like, you want to make sure that you have a solid aerobic base. And basically that just means you're putting in consistent time each week by doing slow efforts, low intensity efforts, right? If you're already at that point, you're already doing great. But if you are just starting from scratch, or maybe you're coming off of an injury, or maybe you're coming off of an off season, the best thing to do right off the bat when you're coming back into training or starting training for the first time is just to run at a low intensity and just do that until you feel like you are hitting a plateau. And the reason why I don't give a specific time frame on that is because sometimes people can continuously make progress for, you know, a few months, so to say, before they hit that plateau. Some people might be going ahead and making progress for like a month before they hit that plateau, right? So there's different kind of things, but I always say, like, if you're just starting to get into training again, building that aerobic base period is super, super huge. And I go through this process with people and clients who come to me who are just starting with running, or they are ultimately coming back from a long off season where they haven't ran or anything of the sorts like that. It's really, really important to get the solid aerobic base first. Then you want to think about when you're going to add in your interval work. Now, before you even jump into anything high intensity, there's one thing you have to know. There's two principles that you have to know when it comes to adding interval work in your training. The first principle is, don't just throw in interval work off the bat. You need to get your body used to the interval work, because the higher intensity that you go, the more stress you're going to put on your body, and the more or the different muscles you're also going to work at a higher intensity. The faster that you go in terms of pace, the more you're going to put pressure on your calves and hamstrings, the more that those are going to activate a lot more. And think about it. If you've been running at a lower intensity where those muscles aren't being utilized as much, and then you go ahead and just all of a sudden out of the blue, flip the switch and go into high intensity work and start to hit these muscles hard that really haven't been firing as much or have been required to fire as much on the lower intensities, you can really risk some injury in there if you don't ease into the speed work. This is why all the time, and maybe if you're listening to this, you can resonate with this. A lot of times when people do start to do speed work right aggressively off the jump, they end up injuring their hamstring, or they end up getting Achilles tendonitis, or maybe plantar fasciitis, or calf tightness, or like anything like that, right? Like, these are things that can be signs that, you know, speed work maybe was a little bit aggressive in there as well. And also at the same time, it could also be muscle weakness and like being able to strengthen those areas. But that's just something that you really, really need to keep in mind of when you're integrating interval work. And so for me, what I found the best way to get your body primed for interval work is to integrate what I call strides. And I shouldn't say what I call, because it's not like my specific thing, but I should say what is called strides. I can't take credit for strides because I didn't make it up. But it's a great, great practice. I don't know who made up strides. Probably, I don't know, John Stride or something. I have no idea. But what strides are, it's a great low risk activity to get your body a taste of intensity before you jump into full intensity work, or it's even just good to add in and throw these in at the end of recovery runs, just to keep your body primed for intensity work. And so what strides are is essentially you'll run typically an easy run, or what I call a steady state run, depending on like your depending on what intensity you're going at. But you would run an easy run, so to say, and then at the end of the easy run, what you're going to do is you'll be going at your easy intensity, then you accelerate, you know, usually like, you know, taking not like right off the bat, but accelerating, you know, in a few seconds up to about a 9 RPE. When I say RPE, I talk about it on this podcast all the time, but it's rate of perceived exertion. And that's generally how I prescribe intensity, and usually what's seen as the gold standard for benchmarking your workouts in the ultra marathon world. And just to kind of give you a little bit of a primer on that, in case you're unfamiliar, RPE is how you feel. It's your perceived exertion. It's how you perceive how hard you are going. And so usually it's measured on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the least intense and 10 being the most intense. And so rating that perceived effort on a scale of 1 to 10 is how you benchmark workouts. So for the sake of this, we're going to use perceived effort, and we're going to say that the stride is what you're going to accelerate into is about a 9 RPE. Now, on your easy runs, you can be anywhere between 2 to 5 RPE, depending on what the run is prescribed at or what you intend the run to be at. But as you accelerate, you want to hit about a 9 RPE, and then you want to hold that 9 RPE for about 15 to 30 seconds. And the reason why I give that range is because if you are newer to strides, I think it's definitely beneficial to more so hang to the lower end where you're around 15 seconds. But if you're pretty more experienced or have done this in the past, you can go up to 30 seconds. But 15 to 30 seconds is where you're going to hold that 9 RPE. Once you hit that time mark, then you're going to slow back down into about a 2 to 3 RPE and then jog for about 30 seconds or so. And then you would repeat again and do that for the repeated amount of sets that you are doing for strides. Generally for strides, I recommend anywhere between 4 to 8 sets, depending on your experience, depending on how you feel on that easy run, everything like that. But implementing those strides, what they're doing is they're not only a great way to get a little bit of intensity, but they're also starting to prime your body for intensity. Because now when you're giving those small doses and small bursts, you are now activating those muscles that are going to be much more engaged when it comes to going at a higher intensity. And at the same time, your body physiologically is going to be able to start to get a taste of that and start to make the adaptations needed to go forth and handle that intensity much more. So before you add in some structured interval work, I always suggest, if you are interested in implementing a interval phase, is doing strides into your workouts. Now, generally, it depends on the person and it depends on the time frame, but I can see strides, you know, when you introduce them in your training, take anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks, depending on, you know, what you're doing and your injury history and everything like that. But 3 to 6 weeks before you are ready for speed work itself. The signs that you are definitely not ready to move from strides to speed work is if you're doing the strides and it causes any kind of sharp pain or injury like pain, right? Like you get a flare up in the IT band or the Achilles starts hurting or you feel tighter. That probably means you're not ready for the interval work yet, and you might actually need to work on some strengthening exercises for those specific muscles so that you can go into those intervals a lot more. So like if you're doing strides and you find that your Achilles is flaring up just from the strides, you can better believe that it's not going to hold up when you increase the amount of intensity when you get to the interval work. So I suggest doing strength exercises to really strengthen the calf and the Achilles so to be able to handle those things. But if you're doing the strides and you feel like you have no problem, you're feeling good, you're feeling like your body's able to handle it, then you are likely ready for speed work. But even if you are feeling that way within 2 weeks, I would still give it at least 1 week, about a 3 week period to do so as well. Now, if you have an injury history with anything in the calf, the Achilles, plantar fasciitis, even knee pain, so to say, you probably want to take it a little bit more conservative with the stride period that you're putting in before you go into interval work, because intensity, when you increase intensity, it is a big, big risk for injury in itself. I don't think it's always a risk, but it is a big risk if you're not taking the right precautions as well, because increasing intensity has a very, very similar effect, if not identical, I shouldn't say identical, but very similar a load on the body as increasing volume. And so that is something that you want to think about, you know, when you're increasing intensity too, is that you don't want to jack up volume at the same proportion of intensity. And there's a smart way to do this in your training where you can make sure that you are mitigating that risk as well. But just know you want to go through a period of strides before you jump into the interval work itself. Hey everybody, just want to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from Jonji, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johnji.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra
to get 10% off your order.
And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know. And hope you give them a shot. Go to johnji.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. All right, so you built up the aerobic base, you've added in strides into your work, now we can actually add in intervals, but a lot of people say, like, how many reps, how many sets, like, how intense do I go, right? There is a pretty good science to this that you can boil down to when it comes to adding in intervals. Now, there are kind of two types of interval work that you can do, right? And these two types of intervals can really relate to the two different anaerobic thresholds that I mentioned before, the VO2 max and the lactate threshold, because one style of intervals is going to really focus on building your VO2 max and the other one's going to focus on building your lactate threshold. So for the VO2 max, that's going to be short intervals. So these are going to be short intervals at a higher intensity. And those are going to target your VO2 max. Think of these as like your traditional kind of like marathon or half marathon style workouts where you're going really, really intense. That's going to be more your VO2 max targeting short intervals, right? The other time is long intervals or tempo runs. And these are going to be longer intervals at a lower intensity of what you would do to target VO2 max. And these are going to inherently be either in the form of, like I said, longer interval periods or tempo run periods where you're focusing on running for a specific time at a lower intensity than VO2 max, but a longer period as well. And so to kind of give you an example of like what a VO2 max workout would look like, a VO2 max workout would essentially look like four sets of 3 minutes at a 8 to 9 RPE and 3 minutes at a 2 to 3 RPE, right? That'll generally be like a VO2 max workout. And then a lactate threshold workout could be something like four sets of 8 minutes at a 6 to 7 RPE and then 4 minutes at a 2 to 3 RPE and repeating that for four sets, right? So I'll talk about like why those are structured in the way that they are, but just know that like those are the differences. So as you can see, the differences is twofold. Number one, the big difference is the duration of the intervals. It's going to be shorter for VO2 max, but it's going to be longer for the lactate threshold. And then also to the recovery time. So as you notice, the VO2 max is 1 to 1. Lactate threshold is 2 to 1 in terms of the active period to the rest period. So that's the other thing on there as well. And then also, of course, obviously the RPE. VO2 max is focusing on 8 to 9 RPE. Lactate threshold is focusing on 6 to 7 RPE. And that's generally because 8 to 9 is going to target your VO2 max. It's going to be much more intense. Lactate threshold is going to target that lactate threshold, which is going to be around a 6 to 7 RPE intensity in there as well. And so the reason why to kind of keep backpedaling here, the reason why the lactate threshold intervals are longer and the VO2 is shorter is because you can sustain lactate threshold intensity for a lot longer than you can VO2 max. So therefore the periods are there as well. And also because the VO2 max period is much more intense, you're going to need a 1-to-1 recovery. Whereas the lactate threshold, you're able to recover a little quicker because it's not as intense. Therefore the 2-to-1 ratio of active work to rest with that as well. So I know that was really technical there, but I think it's really, really important to know. Now, before we talk about like, you know, some workouts that you can throw in terms of VO2 max and lactate threshold, the timing of these are incredibly important. So generally, when you're looking at a full training block, right, what you want to do is first, if necessary, have a period where you're doing aerobic building, aerobic base building, or building up strides, right? You want to have that period where you're doing that, right? After you do that period, then you want to focus primarily on VO2 max intervals. And you can do these intervals anywhere between 1 to 2 to even 3 times a week, even though, listen, this all depends on like your kind of expert level. For the standard, I would say 2 is good for a lot of people. 1 is good if you have like an injury history, and 3 is good if like you have been doing speed work for years and years and you're looking to kind of push the dial a little bit. So, but generally for most athletes, you're going to fall into the 2 times a week range. That's usually what I do now currently. And I've been, you know, doing speed work for years and everything. I only go 2 times a week. Again, not saying that you can't do 3 times a week, but like you should be you know, pretty advanced in the game to do three times a week. So for the most part, two times a week is where you're going to want to do. So two times a week for VO2 max, and those are the intervals you're going to focus on as well for that period. Then once you've gone through the VO2 max period, then you're going to go into a lactate threshold focus period where now you are going to focus on lactate threshold workouts. So you would essentially do a very similar approach where you're probably running the same amount of workouts in a week, whether it's 1 to 3, but now you're focused on lactate threshold intervals at that 6 to 7 RPE. And then once you get into an endurance phase, that's where you start to get to those like really long runs, that really, really big endurance phase where you're putting in a lot of high volume. You would actually either, and this depends on how long of a time, so I don't want to make like a hard and fast rule on this one, but you may keep a lactate threshold workout in there if you have a shorter time frame and you want to work on a little bit of lactate threshold work as you're building up your endurance at the end of a training block as well. Or you can drop lactate threshold workouts completely and focus on steady state intervals, which we're not going to talk about as much in this podcast episode because it is still more of like an easy intensity and we want to talk more about high intensity on this podcast. But just know that like you can keep a lactate threshold workout at the end if you'd like to, if you want a little bit more time to work on that, or you can drop it completely and substitute it with steady state workouts. But notice how, you know, we go from aerobic to strides to VO2 max to then a lactate threshold period and then an endurance period. And the reason why that is because as we're going across the thing, like as we're going across the training program, we are increasing volume. And what we want to do is as we're increasing volume, we don't want to increase intensity, and we actually want to decrease intensity the more volume that we build. And because we're building up more volume, we want to decrease the intensity as well. Now, why aren't we increasing intensity at the volume at the same time? Because I call that a one-way ticket to the PT's office. Because if you are increasing intensity and volume at the same time, what's going to happen is you're going to put a lot of stress on your body and the risk for injury is incredibly high. So as you are building volume in your training program, you are taking down the intensity that you are targeting within your runs and your workouts so that you can make room for more volume. And ultimately, when you even get towards the end of a training program, you want to be getting in a lot of volume because it's very specific to the race, and that's going to prepare you for the endurance of the events, because that is, in the end of the day, like you're going to be running those ultras pretty relatively easy relative to your speed workouts, right? And so you want to give a greater focus on that towards the end. I always talk about this on the podcast. You want to go from least specific first in your training to most specific closer to the training. And so think about it, because VO2 max is least specific. You're going to start with that first. And then lactate threshold is it's a little bit more specific because you're going at a lower intensity, but it's still less specific than your endurance training. And that's going to go in the middle. And then your most specific is your endurance training. And that's going to go at the end. So that's how you would structure those things as well. Now, in terms of like how many, you know, weeks to kind of build those out, that depends on your time frame. It depends on what you're going to work on. It depends on your fitness history. It depends on so many different things. So I won't go into the details on like prescribing like what a standard kind of block looks like, because that really just depends on so many factors. But just know you want to go through a period of base building and strides, then VO2, then lactate threshold, and then endurance. Now, I will say, your endurance period should likely be one of the longest periods to focus on. Your lactate threshold is going to be your second longest, and then your VO2 max is probably going to be your shortest period. And the reason why that is because the higher intensity you're training at, the shorter the adaptation window. And so therefore, you don't have to put as many weeks into VO2 max or lactate threshold as you would endurance for the most part. And so that's just one way to think about it. And again, the exact specificities of how long these things are going to depend on a myriad of different factors. But that's how you would approach, you know, kind of structuring that training in itself, right? So there is that. Now, I'll just give you some quick, you know, kind of workouts that you can implement for VO2 max and lactate threshold. And I'll just give you some standard ones that I think are great to implement and, you know, all those things as well. And I'll kind of like bust a little bit of I don't want to say a myth, but like, you know, a misconception about speed work as well. So for VO2 max, you don't have to get too fancy. What is usually seen as the gold standard for VO2 max workouts is, as I mentioned before, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off. And so you're going 3 minutes at an 8 to 9 RPE and 3 minutes off at at a 2 to 3 RPE, so to say. Now, how many sets are you going to do? And this is where it gets really, really important when it comes to implementing this in your training program is, you know, when you're looking at the amount of sets, you want to look at the time at intensity that you are training at, the time at intensity. So what I mean by the time and intensity is you are essentially like taking the amount of sets that you are going to have multiplied by your time of active work, meaning in the intervals, and that's going to be your time and intensity. So if we're doing four sets of 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, 4 times 3 equals 12. So we have 12 minutes of intensity during that given workout. And that's how you're going to determine how many sets that you need. Now, if you are just starting out, I recommend making your time and intensity at a lower period. So this can be anywhere between 10 minutes to 15 minutes, right? Whereas if you're a little bit more advanced, you can go anywhere between like 15 to 24 minutes, right? But I really wouldn't go past that, you know, kind of range as well, unless you're like a very, very advanced athlete in that sense. So just know that like the more beginner you are, the lower the time and intensity. But here's a caveat as well. As you're implementing this in your training and you're generally thinking about, you know, increasing volume along the way, you generally want to do your most intense workouts on the weeks in a specific block where you have least amount of volume. And so that usually either means earlier on in the specific kind of, you know, let's just say you're doing, and again, I hate this as a general rule, but let's just say you're doing a period where you're doing three weeks of building and 1 week of rest. In that 3 week of building, where you would put your most intense workouts and meaning most time and intensity is going to be in that first week. And then you're going to take down the intensity on those workouts the next week. And then you're going to take down the intensity the next week. And then the recovery week is going to be the lowest. And then when you restart that block, you're going to go back up to the highest intensity on there as well. And so the reason why you're doing this is because, number one, you want to show up to your workouts as fresh as possible. And a big mistake that people make is that they go into, like, they keep increasing intensity on top of increasing volume, which is risky as is. But the problem is, if you are increasing your intensity workout after workout after workout, you're probably going to show up to that last workout really fried, and you might not even be able to push to that 8 to 9 RPE. So you want to be super, super mindful to be able to, you know, show up with your most intense workouts first, and then decrease the intensity within kind of like that cycle of build and recovery, so that you are really structuring it in a way where you're showing up fresh, but also reducing the risk to injury and also increasing volume along the way. Because think about it, if you go from week one to week two and you're taking down the intensity, you can now increase the volume in that week as well, because we're taking down the intensity as well. So that's just one way you want to structure that as well. The same principle applies for your lactate threshold phase and the endurance phase if you are including intervals in that endurance phase. So the same exact principle applies, is you want to have your most intense workouts into the top end of your work and recovery periods when you're structuring a training plan. And ultimately, you want to have those workouts structured as such. Now with lactate threshold, how you would, or one workout that I'll give to you as a really good workout to use for lactate threshold is 3 sets of 10 minutes at a 6 to 7 RPE and 5 minutes at a 2 to 3 RPE. Again, 2 to 1 work rest ratio. And again, we're looking at it in terms of time and intensity as opposed to the given things there as well. So with lactate threshold workouts, we can actually increase the amount of time and intensity. And usually I like to see that time and intensity anywhere between, you know, 20 to 60 minutes, depending on where you're at. If you're more beginner, you want to stick more closer to lower end on that. If you're more of an expert, you want to go to the higher end of that too. But that's how you would kind of build out your workouts in that kind of ratio. And as we're kind of going on that 3 times 10, that's 30 minutes times that intensity. So it's a little bit on the lower end, but it's a good kind of structure to go for on there. Now, a lot of times people ask me, they're like, does the length of the intervals matter? It does. And generally for VO2 max intervals, I like to go anywhere between 30 seconds to 4 minutes. Whereas the lactate threshold work, that can be anywhere between 8 to 20 minutes in terms of the intervals. But I wouldn't get too caught up on the interval time. What I would be more focused on is the time and intensity. And so that's going to determine the sets. And so usually, you know, when I'm looking at interval time in terms of like a specific athlete, like I'm generally modifying the interval time because I'm trying to modify the specific time and intensity, as opposed to like saying like, hey, if a person's going to run longer, you know, at, 20 minutes, it's going to give them more of an adaptation. It's more so for me, like I'm just trying to slice and dice the time and intensity in a way that makes that 2 to 1 work to rest ratio match also at the target time and intensity that I'm going for. And that the sets that I can multiply that by is going to be able to to get on there as well. I think this is the most technical episode we've gone through on Everyday Ultra. So appreciate you listening in an hour into this as well. And if you're listening on a long run, I hope you re-listen to this and take some notes as well. That is a way to look at it. I wouldn't get caught up in the amount of or the, how long the intervals are, but I would keep it into the bounds I was mentioning before, because, you know, if you're going up to like 6 or 8 minutes or, you know, a certain amount of time at the interval periods, it's not going to be as good as well. In terms of the effectiveness, right? So that's how you would structure those workouts as well. But if you go through a period where you're adding in, you know, specific VO2 max workouts in a VO2 phase, and then you move on to lactate threshold workouts in there as well, you will inherently see an increase in speed, assuming that you're recovering well, assuming that you are running those at a true intensity as well, and assuming that you are healthy throughout the process. And so doing this is something that I think applies to every single type of ultra that you're running, whether it's 50K, 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile, 200 mile, right? So I'm doing a 200 mile race where I'll probably never run at like a 6 to 7 RPE, but I am doing tempo interval workouts right now, currently in my training. And so just know that it is important. And so even if, like, a lot of times people will say, like, why the hell should I even incorporate, you know, speed work into my ultra marathon training when I'm never going to hit that intensity? The point is to not get better at that specific intensity. It's to increase your endurance intensity a lot more by introducing the stimulus of speed work. So it's a very, very core part of my training philosophy, and also what has worked well for me, but also what works well in terms of the science and what it suggests as well. So just doing this into your training is going to be an absolute game changer. So what I totally suggest is, like, look at all the information that was given out, right, in terms of like how to structure the intervals, when to put them in your training, everything of the sorts, and put it in a way where it's going to set you up for success so that you can have a well-rounded training block of both easy runs and intensity with interval workouts in your training as well. And that's going to be your recipe for success to get faster, have PRs on your next race, and ultimately run faster for longer. And so that is the formula right there. Now, I know this can get very technical. I know that there's a lot of moving pieces, and I know, you know, it's a lot of things to think about and like map out and everything and do like that. And so, like, for me as a coach, this is what I do for my athletes. I tell my athletes, like, hey, you don't even have to think about these things. I can go ahead and program these things. And I even get more nitty gritty in terms of like the workout types, the durations, the days of the week, and everything like that, right? So those are all the things. And there's a whole myriad of different things that we didn't kind of talk about in terms of like other creative workouts, or at the same time, like where to put them in your training, which I guess, by the way, to kind of talk about that too, I will talk about that in here as well. Because I can't really leave the podcast without it, because that's the last point that I'll talk about on here too, is where do you put these into your week of training? And yeah, we're doing this live, by the way. So I'm not fucking slicing this out and editing it. We're doing this fucking live. So we're making it happen. But where you want to put your interval workouts during the week, ideally, now this would depend on your schedule, your availability, all these kind of things, which is something that I do for athletes personally, where they give me their schedule and I can plug it in. But ideally, assuming you have like time to, you know, kind of make your schedule or anything, which I know isn't a lot of people, but we're going to assume that this is for a schedule or for someone who can train anywhere between an hour to an hour and a half on weekdays, and then weekends they kind of have like the free time to train. How I would generally structure this is I would put the intervals on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the reason why that is because before each of those days, you can either put a rest day or a recovery run day, and before and after each of those, right? So Monday could be a rest day, Tuesday could be an interval day, and then Wednesday could be a recovery run, and then Thursday could be interval day, and then Friday can either be a recovery run or a rest day, depending on the athlete and everything like that. And then your long run can be either Saturday or Sunday, depending on where you're kind of at on there. Now, the reason why that's done in that way is so important is because you are putting a easy day and also a recovery day sandwiching that interval workout. And so there is a benefit of doing back-to-back intervals, but that's more of an advanced class thing and something that I don't recommend starting out with, so I won't cover it in this podcast. But ideally, ideally, when you're first starting to implement intervals, you want to actually have a recovery day beforehand and then also a recovery day after the interval as well, so you can give your body the full time to recover and really reap the benefits of those as well. I also say you want to keep your interval workouts not the day before your long run, because your long run, you're putting a lot of pressure on your legs and you also want to show up fresh to that long run. So that's how I would kind of go ahead and do that, is making sure to put like kind of buffer days in between your intervals and long runs. And in the end of the day, that'll create a good schedule on there as well. Now, again, there's arguments for back-to-back interval days. There's arguments for even implementing intervals inside of your long runs, which I've done for athletes before in the past. But that's a more advanced class kind of stuff we won't get into on this podcast as well. But I would have been remiss to talk about like how to structure that in there as well. Now, again, where I was kind of going with this before I added that last point in there. If you are looking for someone to, you know, give you a personalized plan on how you can implement this in your training and make sure that it's optimized for your needs and everything like that, that's what I do with athletes as a coach. I've worked with tons and tons of athletes and helped them to increase their pace. One athlete, Kiefer Gilbert, if you want to listen to the podcast episode I did from him, he took down his easy intensity pace from 11 minutes to about 8 flat, all because we implemented this kind of work into his training. And I was able to personalize it across different schedules that he had and ups and downs and crazy stuff that he was dealing with at work and all this kind of stuff as well. If you want that too, I would love to work with you. Right now I'm on a wait list, but I have a first come first serve wait list that if you want to get on the list for coaching, my email is everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com. If you just send me an email and saying you would like to be on the wait list for coaching, let me know and I will respond to you into 24 or 48 business hours. And I will go ahead and put you on that wait list. And I would love to work with you to get to your ultra marathon goals. And so that's what I do. But regardless, you have all the tools here also to, you know, look at implementing speed into your training. And so if that's going to be helpful for you, that's awesome. And I'm excited for you to get faster. I'm excited for you to implement the speed work in your training. And ultimately, want to see you hit your PR in your next race. If you have any questions too, feel free to email me, or you can follow me on Instagram at Joe Corsione and shoot me a DM, and I'll be happy to answer your questions as well. And also, of course, most importantly, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I really love these solo cast episodes, and I know I've been getting a lot more requests to do these. And so, and I'm going to do a mix. Like, this was a very, very technical heavy episode, but I'm also going to be doing some motivational mindset episodes that are kind of just more, you know, hype and motivation. And I'm also going to do like the training, you know, technique and the theories and the applications like this one as well. So I'm trying to find a balance between the two, and that's where I'm really looking to go with this podcast. So I hope this was helpful. If this was helpful, definitely let me know. I would love to hear from you. And thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It really, really means the world to me. And again, if you have any other questions, reach out. We'll be doing these episodes every week, and excited to continue to help you be a better endurance athlete every day, my friends. Thank you so much again for listening. Appreciate you all. And remember, my friends, be a better endurance athlete every day, and we'll talk soon. Take care.